All right, call to order the Emeryville Transportation Sustainability Committee meeting, June 9th, 2026.
Yep.
Could we have a roll call, please?
Yeah, Member Moore?
Here.
And Chair Valpisano?
Here.
Move to public comment for items not on the agenda. Are there any commenters in the room, or we're not doing online comments yet, but seeing no one in the room, do we have any online comment cards?
No.
We'll close public comment. Move to item four, approval of 12th, 2026, regular meeting action minutes.
So move.
Second. Roll?
Yeah, Member Moore?
Aye.
And Chair Valpisano?
Aye.
No action items, so moving to information items, 6.1, active transportation plan update.
Any on this? There you go. All right, so welcome to the second annual report of transportation plan progress. All right, proceed.
I'm moving.
It's not moving. That's weird. But everybody saw it just moving to my own. There we go. Okay, so I'm just going to go over this real fast as a refresher. Just do a little background on the vision, what we have in here, and what we're reviewing for the year. So there's 6 goals, 11 policy recommendations, 14 program recommendations, grouped into equity, encouragement, education, safe routes, evaluation, faith finding, and then we have 4 project maps. So we're just reporting on the status of that for each year. So as a reminder, this is a 10-year plan. So it goes to 2033. So we're in the second year of evaluation and focus on projects that have the most impact on improving safety, comfort, and mobility for all. I have to use this, so only let me move forward but one way. Okay. And when we developed this plan, there was a really robust outreach to the public. And for this reason, it had a lot of public support when it was adopted. And I think continues to have a lot of support ongoing throughout the implementation process. So the vision really is for the city to be a community where active, sustainable transportation is the easy choice, that it's safe, comfortable, equitable, and accessible to all. So our goals are all qualitative. So what I've done last year and this year is to take these goals of being comfortable, connected, joyful, equitable, sustainable, implementable, and talk to me about it with BPAC. We just have a free-flowing conversation, and then I take some of the highlights from that conversation and put them into the report. This year was interesting compared to last year, where we went through each thing and talked about it systematically. It kind of bounced around the conversation more. And what happened because of that is I think people noticed a lot more interconnectivity between these goals. So if you look under comfortable, people noticed that the removal of the Powell Hall slip lane and the transformation of that into a plaza really increased the comfort of that intersection for people. And they also noticed this as being very joyful. It brought a lot of joy to people. And another example, speed bumps along the greenway. People don't usually think of speed bumps as comfortable or joyful, but I think the note what people are noticing here is that it makes them feel safer and provides a more comfortable ride and a more joyful ride. So it was an interesting conversation to have. So for connected, the 40th Street connection to the Loop and Bay Trail is highly anticipated. And 3 new bike share stations are a big deal. We got 3 new bike share stations at one shot. That's the largest increase we've had since the bike share system began in Emeryville. And then for joyful, specifically the Bike to Wherever Day was very joyful. People mentioned multiple things about it. Lots of participation for kids, the treasure hunt passport. And then the people in the public who were attending the meeting made public comments on this. And they both mentioned the joyfulness of how they experienced the city on a daily basis. One person mentioned that they walk from 53rd Street to the marina every day. And while some parts of the infrastructure they know to have challenges, it brings them a lot of joy that they know that they're able to do that comfortably walking. And also Cushion Park just being a comfortable place and joyful to be able to get to easily. For equitable, the speed limit study was noted. I was also noticed with lowering speed limits also being comfortable. For sustainable, obtaining the new bike lane sweeper that went into effect this year. That was something people were excited about and implementable. I'll just note that the plan continues to help interdepartmental communication to make sure that we're making sure our policies and practices are in alignment. And we have a lot of progress shown on the maps that we'll see in a few minutes. So there's 11 policy recommendations. So just going over them in brief, saying that if there are complete progress ongoing or haven't been worked on yet, I don't think anything really is going to be complete during the course of this plan. These are things that we're going to be ongoing or in progress, right? So commitment to plan implementation, that's ongoing. We're never going to be complete, right? We have a commitment to implementation. And then for maintenance, of course, maintenance is going to be ongoing as well. Standard practice to make sure that we're updating our bicycle pedestrian surfaces along with when we do our street work. For safe routes to school, we are in better communication in 2025 and certainly in 2026, the school and AC Alameda County. We still have some work to do on that. They have updated reports that need to be done that are not complete, but we have a safe route lens in the city, and that is really reflected in the speed reductions, which are including the streets adjacent to the school. So we're working on that, even if the program for Safe Routes to School is not directly being implemented in the way that it's envisioned in the plan yet. So banning right turn on red, that's an ongoing continuing assessment. We evaluate that each time we do paving projects. And then plan evaluation. So we, for not yet, when the ATP is updated, we don't need to update the ATP yet. We're only 2 years in, so we don't need to do that, right? And then for ongoing, when there's big projects doing pedestrian bike counts before they're constructed, that's not applicable right now, but it is ongoing. And then for progress, having a centralized database to track the implementation status of our work, and that's basically what the ATP is doing. So this is how we're tracking that progress. Leading pedestrian intervals, ongoing. Lowering speed limits, ongoing. Really exciting, the work we've been able to do now. And then moving on to 13 programmatic recommendations. So for equity, these are also all ongoing or in progress. So we're moving forward on all of these things for targeted outreach, bicycle accessory giveaways. Previously was happening more with PD, is happening right now as part of Bike to Work Day, and then working on equity with our infrastructure. So for highlights on that, prioritizing tree plantings and the Triangle Marina based on community input. And then for encouragement, we have the expanded bike share program, which we mentioned we have the three new stations. Parkview street events, bicycle friendly community. That's a program we applied to. That's not yet because you need to have a number of projects actually fully implemented, and we're not there yet. So when we have more stuff shown on the maps, we can do that. We're thinking 2027. We'll assess that. And then the employer-based encouragement programs, that's an ongoing thing we look for opportunities for, as well as bike parking retrofit. We'll talk about that a little bit. So as I mentioned, the bike share expansion is a big deal. Three new stations. Parkview street events tend to be very popular, only growing in popularity. I think everybody went to the holiday parade this year. That's very fun. Spooky Streets continues, and the Harvest Festival is such a success. For the employer-based programs, how that's working mostly right now is through Bike to Wherever Day and having a lot of connection with multiple businesses and many members of the community come out to support that event. And for the bike parking retrofit program, this program is really about recognizing that we have a lot of residential projects that do not have bicycle parking built into them because it was not required when they were built. And it's really the majority of residences in the city. So in 2025, staff got together and started identifying different ways to approach that. And that will, that actually work has just begun on a study for existing bicycle parking in 2026. We just started it this week. Now that we have some interns who can work on that. But preliminary work for that was done with staff, and then also presentations were provided to both BPAC and this committee last year on the status of bicycle parking in residential places. So for education and safe routes, specific programs for this did not happen in 2025. We continue to look for opportunities. And so I do think some of that will happen towards the end of 2026. And then, as I mentioned, there's overlap between our programmatic and policy, and there has been some improvement with the safe routes in terms of outreach between the city and the county and school. And we're trying to move forward on getting some documentation for that. And we are prioritizing work around our campuses. So again, driver education programs, we didn't have staff capacity for that in the past year. The traffic counts are ongoing. We'll look at some of our ped bike counts later on in the presentation. And we find new progress. We did have new public art for 40th Street approved. Developed and approved the public outreach process, and we had our animal footprints on 40th Street and other places so people know where to stand for the not having to press the button for activation. So we have four maps. They're broken down by major projects, pedestrian improvements, spot improvements, and bikeways. These are there's a lot of overlap between them, right? Same city. It's this different way of kind of looking at the same problems, right? Slightly different emphasis for each map. So you'll see a lot of redundancy here. But for major projects, for 2025, initial analysis was completed on the loop. And then for 40th Street and Shawmut, final design environmental phase for CEQA nearly completed in 2025, fully funded for construction on Cal Street. The study for Alvaro Peninsula is substantially completed and Hollis South Powell under construction. A lot of work done on that in 2025. And then here's what that looks like. So the yellow part is a study. So nothing that you're seeing on the ground, right? You might be experiencing some public outreach, some public meetings, but you're not seeing anything on the ground yet. For work in progress, the blue, that means that you're in a design phase. There might not be public meetings. It might seem like nothing's happening. You can't tell because stuff on the ground hasn't happened yet, but we're through a study phase. And then, but there's work being done to get to the part where you can build. And then green is you can see something happening, right? Like it's done, or you can see that there's physical changes taking place. So looking for proposed pedestrian improvements, Powell Street's study again, and Hollis South to Powell again. And here's what that looks like. And then we also added this year the purple color for work that was done before the current year. So work that has been completed as part of the plan 2024. And then here's a snapshot of that Hollis and Powell intersection before and after. You can see a substantial difference and why that might be considered more comfortable or joyful for pedestrians and bicyclists. And then spot improvement. So this is really a focus on intersections. So this has a lot of overlap with the last two maps, but the green I'll zoom in on there is at the Powell and Wallace area where we just saw the photo also. And then for proposed bikeways map, Doyle Street finished the study and design for 62nd to 59th, 40th Street and Shawmut again, final design phase. Outline 41st Street and South, there is work on that that was planned and designed. And then for Powell Street, substantially substantially completing some planning work, 10% design. And so when you look at that, you can see it's really a substantial amount of the city for just 2 years, right? There's a lot going on for just 2 years there. And then here's what that looks like on Shawmut before and after for the bike infrastructure, having those protected lanes. And then also just highlighting that when this plan ATP was adopted, we did not have a local roadway safety plan, and that was adopted in 2025. And that's a huge piece of work for the city, and that will work in conjunction with this. It's like the safety side of things next to like the vision of the city, which would be the ATP. So those things working in concert moving forward will be very powerful tools for improving our infrastructure in the city. And just looking at some of the data, For bike share counts and pet bike counters in the city. Looking at the green wave counters, there's a 5% increase from 2024 to 2025, and the bridge counter is 16% increase, which is really substantial. Would anybody like to take a guess at the busiest day for the bridge counter?
Tokyo.
Huh?
Tokyo Express.
Tokyo Express. Oh, that's a good guess.
Bike director?
The holiday.
There you go. Holiday parade. It's like a huge spike for the holiday parade with everybody going from City Hall to Bay Street. Yeah.
Just everyone every day.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun. The Greenway counter, as you know, in 2026 had its 2 million, but the bridge counter hit half a million. So really well used facilities, right? Looking at the bike share usage, it's a substantial growth year over year. It's the numbers are really quite impressive. A lot of this is that also there's been investment in electrification of adding electric bikes, and then also an actual additions of stations and system wide. So when we have 3 additional stations for Emeryville this year, that was part of a system wide expansion where hundreds of stations were added throughout the system, largely in San Francisco, because that's the heaviest used part of the system, but San Jose, Berkeley as well. And they're looking into expanding to other East Bay cities as well. I don't know if or when that's going to happen, but it's something they're definitely working on potential for. And that concludes my presentation. If you have any comments on that, this will be going to Planning Commission and to City Council as well. This is to implement the part of, where's my thought sharing? The part of the HCP that says that we provide regular updates to make sure the plan is implemented and doesn't sit on the shelf.
Appreciate that. If any questions?
I was curious, the bike counter on the bridge, how has that looked for the current year? Do we have a six month period of data that we have? I'm just curious about the Tokyo Central.
What the spike was like for that? I did not ask for that data. What does anybody know what works?
You can follow up and get you that information.
You mentioned ATP updates. So 2 years in, we're not doing that. Is there a cadence of updates? Are we expecting an update before 10 years?
Oh, do you mean having to revise the ATP itself?
Analyzing it to make broader changes.
I don't anticipate that unless there's significant that changes that necessitates it. The only thing I can think of is that the general plan actually needs to be updated. And that needs to be updated about 2030, 2031. And this plan runs through 2033. So there's a little bit of overlap there. I think at that point, what we would probably do is wait till the general plan is adopted and then go through the ATP process based on the general plan.
Okay.
We're not there yet.
Sure.
Right. But there, you don't typically, our last pet bike plan was never updated. It ran its course for the 10 years. Did you have any thoughts on that, Colin?
That sounds about right. And looking at the amount that we have slated in this plan, it's probably an appropriate time period.
Yeah. It's ambitious, and then also conditions change a little bit, and you kind of want to let the plan run its course unless you see something obvious. So I could see amending something that needs to be amended very specifically.
Yeah.
But typically these types of plans don't get amended very often.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
One other question. I know philosophically with the ATP, we're trying to be proactive about reducing collision likelihood between vehicles, pedestrians, bikes, and so forth. Looking forward with the local safety aspect of it, do we periodically query police reports or safety data for those collisions? If there is some incident that results in a PD call, is that compiled at all so that that can kind of possibly inform future projects or, possibly justify some of the changes that we're making that might be being studied or upcoming, and how is that, I guess, reported, solicited, compiled?
I might want to defer to you on this, but I will say that we certainly looked at the development of ATP to focus on areas that needed focus. And sources for that would be looking at our own collision data with the police department and that. So, do you want to add to
that? Yeah, I mean, essentially what you're describing is the local roadway safety plan. It has done that, has collected the safety data, compiled it, analyzed it. And one additional layer that we added was creating what is the precursor to projects in the appendices. So lists based on different work areas, whether it is like signing striping related or traffic signal related or more heavy bird change related. So we kind of have different buckets of all of these tasks. And whenever we come through with our sustainable streetscape projects, we then take from these elements and try to synthesize them together and create a project.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Except no further questions, we can move to public comment. Any public comment room? Any online comment cards?
No online comment. Oh,
thank you. Closing public comment for everyone. Any further comments on TP plan update, ATP updates?
No, nothing else.
Thank you. This is very helpful.
Yeah, thank you.
And it's great work, team, on a lot of progress this week. Appreciate it. Excellent. We can move on to 6.2, Powell Street Rehabilitation Project.
You want to share it? Well, hello, Chair, Vice Chair, honorable members of the attending committee today, and general fans of infrastructure at home. I'm Nick Ignacio. I'm an associate civil engineer at Public Works, and I'll be sharing an informational update for TIP Project ESI-03, Powell Street Sewer Main Rehabilitation Project. So we'll go to the next slide, please. Okay, starting off with some backgrounds. Emeryville is one of several agencies named as a defendant under the consent decree for the CD with the Environmental Protection Agency. The CD requires all defendants to submit and follow through on plans to identify and repair defects in the sewer systems. So a significant portion of the gravity sewer main on Powell Street west of I-80 was long identified as a reach of sewer with significant defects. So the primary defects that ail that section of sewer are sag deficiencies, and the sag deficiencies exacerbate the buildup of fats, oils, and grease, otherwise known as fog. And the buildup of fog causes critical risk of blockage and sewer overflows. So the city included a project to rehabilitate this section of sewer among its plans that we submitted to the EPA. Next slide, please. So as you can see there, this is a snapshot from a recent CCTV inspection that we had done at that particular reach of sewer. As you can see, about 40% of the cross-sectional area is blocked by that greaseberg, just big piece of fog that is in there. This is just downstream of Trader Vic's, and this is post a single pass of cleaning. So we need to go back in there and clean, I don't know exactly how many passes, but a lot more passes to get this dislodged. So that being in there is what is causing a critical, I guess, high risk level of overflows and backups in the sewer. So, next slide, please. So the Public Works Department developed three preliminary rehabilitation project concepts on which to base an assessment. The objective of the assessment was to establish criteria on which to select which of the three project concepts would be the most appropriate to rehabilitate this section. And the city staff of the city, assisted by our consultant, Rodgers. So next slide, please. This is the project area. So as you can see, it's the green. That's the alignment of our gravity sewer. The extents would be from Trader Vic's down to that pink dot, which would be the last maintenance access hole before our sewer would empty into the EB Mud interceptor. Next slide, please. So normally I'd just be clicking through this really quickly, but the contenders, Next slide, please. More thematic. It's more dramatic when I'm questioning, asking Jeff, so apologies there. There's an alternative zero that we explored, which is not actually a rehabilitation project. It's a minor repair. We install flow monitoring. We're considering an alt zero. That's the shorthand name for it, but it's not a rehabilitation. Next slide, please. Alternative one would be a targeted spot repair, which is a partial repair of the system. Only the current defects, old spot, old pipe would stay where it's at. Next slide, please. Alternative two would be full inline replacement. So we would take everything out, put it right back where it's supposed to be in plan view where it's at. But the design would implement some systemic improvements, which could build, they would be vertical basically in and out of the page. And next slide, please. Alternative three would be a full relocation. So we put a brand new sanitary sewer system line south of the median on Pyle Street. The existing system would be abandoned in place and future O&M activities would move out of the current maintenance easement that we have on Pyle property. Next slide, please. So I'll move on to discussion of alternatives. Next slide, please. So this alternative would be the least costly, alternative zero, but it does not address any of the defects. Only none of the major defects. The O&M efforts would not likely become easier, but the monitoring could lead to a refinement in the maintenance, maybe the maintenance schedule, but it would depend on what kind of data we could gather. But again, the major deficiency would not be addressed, so the differential settlement that currently ails the system would be likely to worsen using this alternative. The cost would be about $250,000. Next slide, please. So alternative one, again, the targeted spot repair projects would address all of the current observed defects, so the pipe that have the sag defects, but it would leave the remainder of the existing pipe and manholes, and access holes, pardon me, in place. So the issue with this is that the remaining pipe that stays, so the pipe that doesn't currently have the defects and then would remain, and they're likely to continue to experience differential settlements as years go on. Essentially, alternative one or the spot repair would be kind of a short-term solution. We would anticipate that we would need to rehabilitate the pipes that are left in place that are not currently showing defects but are likely to show it in the future. In addition to that, systemic performance improvements couldn't really be explored because some we are sort of fixed by the what we can do is fixed by the pipe that is not currently damaged that's remaining in place. You can basically only design to connect to that portion of pipe that remains. There is a small chance that O&M effort is eased as a result of the new pipe placement, new pipe, so it's going to be better than it was before. The cost estimate for this is about $3.7 million. Next slide, please. So alternative two would be the full inline replacement of the pipe. So it has all the advantages of one, but the key advantage is that all of the pipe is replaced, which means all of the bedding in the alignment can be replaced and improved at the same time. So that removes the likelihood that there will be a near-term future project, and we expect to get the full 50-year life cycle of the infrastructure at that point. In addition to that, there's an opportunity to provide systemic improvements, such as increasing the pipe slope, improving the bedding throughout, and renewing all the lateral connections to the public sewer. So that would come in at a cost estimate of about $5.9 million. Next slide, please. And finally, we talk about the full relocation of alternative three. Alternative three has basically all the advantages of alternative two in the terms of the performance of the pipe, because we have the same freedom that we can have putting it in the same location. With the added benefit of moving the infrastructure out of the easement where it is currently, so maintenance operations would it would affect the public a little less, certainly the private property owners that exist in. But the primary downside to this is the alignment is new, and so there are unknown subsurface conditions, and that level of uncertainty, particularly closer to the shoreline, would translate to higher budgetary expectations. In addition to that, property owners are still required to maintain their own private sewers and their connections to our public sewers. Since we'd be moving the alignments south by anywhere between 50 to 100 feet, something like that, that's an additional 50 to 100 feet per connection to the public sewer that the private property owners, would have to continue to maintain. So it increases burden on them at that point. The cost for that is about $7.8 million anticipated. Next study, next slide, please. Study conclusion. Thank you. Read my mind. Staff thinks that the alternative two would be the best option, which would be to replace the sanitaries to remain in full along the current alignment. You get the benefit of all the defects being repaired. It's the best long-term solution, so you get your full 50-year life cycle. And there's the opportunity to install performance improvements, mostly increasing the slope of the pipe, increasing the bedding to arrest the future differential settlements. Increased slope of the pipe means faster flow of wastewater, which means less, a lower likelihood for the fats, oils, and grease to stick within the pipe. And overall, as a result of there being a lower likelihood of fog sticking in the pipes, you would reduce the overall O&M effort as well. So go to the next slide, please. Construction considerations. So the projected start of the project would be anywhere between the middle of 2028 and 2029, and then projection. The project can be done during regular city weekday work hours, not on holidays. We would make sure that PSL bypass would be in place so that private properties would not see an interruption to their sanitary sewer service. The landscaping would be replaced in kind, and that would be included as part of the project specifications. And the city and its inspection team or its construction management team would manage traffic control full-time during the construction of this. So one last little thing is that PSL and private mains will have the connections to the public sewer replaced. So we'll make that brand new, make sure that portion of it is watertight. But ultimately, maintenance and rehabilitation of the private sewer laterals and private sewer mains that connect to the public sewer are still the responsibility of the private owner. And so as part of this project, the city will not be wholesale replacing the full lines that are owned by the private property owners. So next slide, please. So next steps here, the Public Works Department will seek to advertise a request for proposals for the plan specifications and engineering opinion of costs for alternative two, which would be to replace the sanitary sewer main in full along its current existing alignments. And there is currently adequate funding in the sewer capital funds to finance the project. Next and final slide, we will take questions and comments.
Thanks, Dr. Fisher.
Thanks for the overview. So is there an issue with the overall slope to the, could you go back to the, where you showed the tie-in to the main? There was like, you said there was a pink dot. Where was it?
Yeah, so
it's flowing west, is it, or east?
Sorry. It's flowing east, yeah. So yeah, that's right. Where I think that's where my chair went.
And then the chair, okay, I see. So then that little star at the under the, past the 80, that's where, so it has to, is it sloped properly there? There's just a few sags, or is the slope bad?
It's kind of.
Like, how much space do you guys have to work with?
I'll answer yes. So basically, it's existing pipe. It was built very shallow to begin with, and so there's not a lot of tolerance for there to be vertical deflection. The flow is really slow. And with the sags occurring, that little bit of deflection really it exacerbates low flow even more than it would on a pipe that is a little steeper. So it's less than, I think it's like 1% or something like that, and ideally we're closer to 2. So the performance improvement that we're discussing would be to very slightly steepen the slope of that to increase the flow of the wastewater. So the pink dot that is shown there is the last point that we would tie into the EBMUD interceptor. So that's kind of like the final location that we essentially.
So you are able to improve the slope across that whole run.
That's what we would explore. You know, at the time that it was built, I'm sure that this was within tolerance. But if we're going to open up the entirety of the alignment, then what we would explore is what we can do feasibly to get that.
And what causes a sag like you showed? Like, are these metal pipes? Like, how are they just bending?
They're currently largely vitrified. It's clay pipe mostly, with some asbestos pipe as well. So what causes them to bend is settlement of the base material underneath the pipe. It's just the soil does what it does. It doesn't help that that sea level is rising, groundwater is rising, and that loosens the soil effectively. In localized areas, it's not like homogeneous necessarily. And so it's really differential settlement that causes that. If it all settled at once, then there's a net zero across there. It's still the same sloped pipe, theoretically. But since we have this variance in settlement beneath these pipes, you have those sags that occur.
What's the new material that the pipe would be made out of?
The pipe material would be HDPE, which is, it's more resilient. It's more ductile than VCP. So it's what we would prefer to put in moving forward with all of our sewer projects. But it would be a focus on the bedding material beneath the pipe that would seek to arrest this differential settlement. So without getting too, until we have the ability, or rather until the project kicks off and we analyze the soil beneath, we can't really speak to exactly what that fix is going to be. But a wholesale improvement of the bedding material will make sure that the soil doesn't tend to settle as much as it has here.
So is there a concern with the, you mentioned the groundwater, is that something that could re-unsettle things, or that'll be studied once you guys get in there?
That's correct. It would be studied once we get in there and be part of the design analysis process.
So then I guess the question, you know, that cost estimate, are there, you know, what's the, seems like a project like this might need substantial contingency. Is that included for in that estimate?
Yeah, there's contingency included in this estimate.
However, upon completion of the design process, the number is likely to be revised. We'll see what happens when we get there. But that's our current best guess.
Okay. And then how does it work? Because I know Watergate, they just did some very costly sewer lateral certifications. How does that, and so if you put in a new main and presumably tie in their laterals again, how do we, I guess, do they need new certificates? Does somebody need to re-pressure test those sections? Is it just considered good to go if we talk about the scope of our work?
No, so it's more of a specs type thing that we'll have to work out. Part of practice is to ensure all connections are watertight, including all the way up to where the next testing location is. Typically, that would be the next clean out upstream. But yeah, it's not like it would invalidate their, the end product, the end goal for us is not, would not be to invalidate their certificates of compliance that they've received.
So presumably there's some process with EBMUD where we could say, hey, we did the tie-ins in such and such a way, and that's verified. And then they would say, okay, you did not void the pressure tests that were done, and you don't need to repeat them. Maybe that's the goal.
Yeah. So that's more of a regional ordinance discussion. But I can touch on enough to kind of manage that.
Well, I just don't want us to take on that cost, I guess, is the question. Like, is there a risk that we take on PSL retesting?
No. So my understanding, and I have to discuss this with my counterparts at EBMUD, is that that Watergate, and I know at least Watergate, because it's a condominium, was put under a corrective action work plan they had to comply with, and that was what they needed to do to come into compliance with EBMUD's regional ordinance and ours as well. So as long as they fulfilled those requirements, then, and they get their certificates under those terms, then us making these adjustments here is not going to void their certificates of compliance.
Okay. And then how would this dovetail at all with the Powell redesign work? Because it would be sad to do, there was a Powell redesign and then it got all dug up, or this is done before any construction would happen.
The challenge is the Powell redesign project is not funded.
Oh, that's right.
And this project is. Okay. So we would, if we had funding for the Powell redesign project that was aligned, we probably would be having that discussion, but unfortunately it's not.
Okay. Makes sense. Thank you.
I think to my memoir's question on the, what the privacy of a lateral times, if we, if we change the slope sufficiently, then the privacy rule on Old Iron is now, you know, where before it was whatever, matching, you know, it's 5 feet below the surface, but now our pipe is 10 feet below the surface. Do we, how is that connection still made?
Yeah, that's a fair point. So generally our thought was that we would, I mentioned in there that we would reconnect all the connections there. I don't exactly know what way, shape, and form that will take, but you can do something like a steeper drop or something like that, alter the shape of the pipe or the fitting, basically where it comes in, and still essentially make up that difference in height. Over a shorter period, it's not like we'd have to pull out the entire PSL. We wouldn't anticipate having to pull out their entire PSL and redo the entire thing. But again, that's part of the study.
Right.
We would ideally like to steepen it as much as possible, but that would factor into the design as well.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Sorry, as a follow-up question related, but we don't expect the actual drop to be an order of magnitude of 5 feet, do we?
Yeah,
we're talking about far less tolerances and less room to work with.
Right. Establishing those tolerances will be part of the design process. Sure. So once we actually get in and look at these conditions and see what's possible. So.
How far below ground, would the connection be at the EB Mud facility?
I unfortunately have been on
site. I have no idea how sewers work, so this is interesting. Great. And then can you remind me in the, I guess across the city's other liabilities for our sewer mains. How many other projects remain of this, some magnitude that the sewer fund would be funding?
Currently, it's this one.
Okay.
So
we have money in the fund.
We've been building up funds to do this very project. Gotcha. Okay. For the last, gosh, I think 10 years now, I think, something like that. So
where did the sewer fund funds, were those just?
So the sewer, the sewer fund is 510, and that is funded through our wastewater rates, basically, that are connected by EBMUD and then to us, basically. Oh, sure. So that goes to 510. A certain amount of that is transferred to 511, which is the capital fund.
Gotcha.
Okay. And to clarify, ratepayers pay for that as part of their water bill, correct?
Correct. Yes. Sorry, that wastewater bill.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you. And how, I know that, you know, this is part of the design, but like you mentioned two years of construction or construction start
2028,
2029.
Yeah.
How
so
long
again,
our
it, this
take.
I think we were thinking probably a year and a half, very roughly. But that's accounting for potential delays.
Yeah,
we haven't really
gotten that. Just,
sure. It depends on it. We're really far out. So if there's a desire to not wholesale, like for example, not wholesale, dig everything up at once,
right,
have people come in and do all the pipe at once and disrupt everyone's kind of like, but not disrupt the surface all at the same time, and that'll be kind of faster. But if we don't want to do that, we sort of do kind of a skip sort of construction staging, that is slower. Factors at play, but not until we actually have a construction schedule, it's very hard to say.
Okay. And then what, and this is just an information item, what are the next steps on?
Sure. So the next steps would be for us to put out an RFP for design services.
Okay.
So that is what, we wanted to share this first and see if we could gather any kind of feedback that we possibly could that would factor into putting together our RFP. And once we have that basically put together, we put the RFP out and see if we can get design services.
Gotcha. And then one other question. So you mentioned that there are system-wide benefits to the fault replacement. What kinds of things does that include? And are there other projects or improvements that we wouldn't have to do across the system, or is that we would avoid clogs across the system, so there's other costs that we're not incurring?
I think so. Maybe I didn't mean to mislead. The systemic improvement would be for this region.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So The systemic thing that we were exploring was just for the reach. So that was more in the context of if we just stop it there, we can't really explore lowering.
Any other questions?
None for me.
Any public comment? None. Any comments?
Nothing else.
Okay. It's been helpful. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. On to the next most exciting item in public works realm, which is C++ fix. 3.3 C++ fix.
Great. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm George Rivera. I'm the Operations and Facility Manager here for the city. This afternoon, we're going to be talking about the C-Click Fix stats. And just as an intro, we're looking at January to April of 2026 versus January of April versus 2025. So it's an apples-to-apples comparison. Slide, please. So we're looking at the contents of this slideshow. Are the requests created? And that's basically what we heard as the city. The acknowledgement times is how fast we've responded. The closure times are how quickly the work got done. And the takeaway and recommendations are basically what comes next for us. Slide, please. So the total scorecard at a glance for 2026, graffiti is down compared to last year by 13%. You see other issues and litter and dumping are up significantly. And that is a sign that our constituents / residents are using the reporting format and are becoming more comfortable with that reporting format. And it shows in the numbers. Just looking across the board, the residents are reporting a wider range of issues, and that's why you see such a high number of the other issues. Slide, please. Request created by category here. As you look at it, right, you see the growing community engagement because of C-Click Fix. The year to year, you see graffiti is slightly down compared to last year. Other issues and concerns as well. But the safety issues, we would deem these more so safety issues. So the staff is in the field, right? So they're able to address those issues. And the way we are kind of working right now as a public works is safety first. Public safety issues are kind of what drive us. So as you look at it, you can see that it is working year over year. The 7 of 9 categories show an increase across the board. So as we look at that, it reflects more reporting by the residents, not necessarily more problems, but we are getting more reports in different areas that we weren't receiving previous. Slide, please. Here is the largest, the biggest leader for all the categories is our graffiti. And as you look at the graffiti numbers, we have a recommendation listed on the slide, but we will need to continue to review the data sets moving forward. And the reason is eventually and hopefully we can devise basically a heat map, right? So we are able to designate the areas where there's higher activity quite potentially. But for right now, this is the max. We've peaked out and our resources are peaked out. So that should be noted. Next slide, please. These are our biggest operational wins overall. If you look at just 1 year to the next, sidewalk and curb issues are being addressed in 8.5 days versus 36 days previous. The graffiti is being addressed actually more rapid. And then the teams are in the field and they address those sensitive citizen issues. And again, the reporting format is opening it up for citizens to report more issues and we're able to address them. But from year to year, you're looking at 40 days to 4 days in acknowledgement. So that's a huge increase. That's huge operationally for us. Slide, please. The closure times and dramatic recovery, you know, if you look at graffiti, it's stable. City parks, stable. Usually we put the arrow for a 0.5 of the day. So that kind of speaks for itself there. But you're looking at, again, sidewalk and curbs, 17 days to 1.2. Flooding is being addressed in half a day. Litter abatement of 5.9 to 3.6 days. And then our park issues, our tree issues, 18.6 days down to 2.5 days. So we are out there and addressing those issues with the current resources we have. Again, the numbers in the next data set will potentially go back up. As the residents report more issues, you're going to see everything go back up. And then again, we're at capacity staff-wise. So we'll need to look to make some adjustments. And we'll continue to monitor the data for those adjustments and then announce those during the next presentation. Slide, please. So how did we do this? Is the big question, right? Everybody's going to ask, how did we get there? Well, Public Works was able to fill three of those positions. We were able to equip the staff with iPads in the field, which, you know, cut down on transport time. Like, they don't have to actually go back to the office and close a ticket. They can actually do it in their truck. They turn on their hotspots. They've been attending OSHA-certified training, so two certified trainings in, before the beginning of fiscal year in July 1st. It's a major step for our team in training. We're adding tools to their toolbox, making them more of an asset here for the city. looking at it as a whole, again, the technology, workforce, and staffing is how we have reached this point. Next slide, please. And here we have our challenges ahead. So the increased demand with C-Click Fix outreach will increase. We have outreach tools that we're making available to the constituents slash residents, which will, again, increase the reports that we receive, increase the one-offs that we're receiving. The staff constraints, again, I've mentioned it a couple times, but we're maxed out. And so the metrics will suffer a little bit. The numbers will go in the reverse flow, and we will have to report an increase. But we know that in advance, and so we're reporting that so there isn't a shock in the next data set. We have a new work order system that's going to be implemented, Limbo, which will have a temporary effect on metrics as well, because the increase in demand will increase in tickets. We're just going to receive more tickets overall, so we want to make people aware of that. As we work the kinks out in the new system. So again, expect the numbers to move the wrong way temporarily, but again, we just want to be transparent. And next slide, please. And so what you're looking at is our proposed outreach signage. The QR code is active. So if you scan it with your phone, it will take you to C-Click Fix and ask you what area you'd like to address. So as we see that, right, we're putting these up in the parks and on bus stops. And this is not only a sign, these are stickers put all through the city of Emeryville to bring awareness. What do you see as a taxpayer, as a resident, that needs fixing? Now, it might not all apply to what we do, which is other concerns, and we'll note that in the reporting module, but it also should be noted that we will receive more one-offs, we will receive more tickets that we can't close in our area of responsibility. The signage is going to be posted, like I said, parks and street signs, and at a certain point, you know, we will see performance, again, stagnated temporarily. It could be a 3-, 6-month, 9-month period, but we're dedicated to make those changes and to make sure that the issues are being resolved as they're reported. So that's all I have today, unless you have some questions for us.
I'd just like to also add some words of appreciation for our maintenance staff and
how they have really taken, moved the throttle significantly on these performance, these KPIs. And appreciate George giving us a heads up that essentially what you had, I think I'd like to say that the numbers in a certain way reflect the performance that had always been there, right? And what we've done is we've brought the performance and the reporting in line with the performance. And that's why he's giving us a heads up about when we have storm events, for example, you should see a bump. Because now it's now they're closely correlated and the reporting is working, right? Or if we have a significant amount of planned maintenance and we have to do our proactive work and not our reactive work at certain times of the year, then you should see that coming through the numbers as well.
Right. So as to spin off of what Mohammed said, the perfect example is the graffiti abatement, right? There's a suggestion to increase graffiti abatement by 3 days instead of 2 days. But as you just said, we have planned maintenance. So something along those lines will suffer, right? We won't be able to do as many potholes that month or whatever it is, but we do have to address safety first. And so that's kind of how this is driven. We're addressing safety issues first and really just getting out into the field right away. I mean, with the acknowledgement down to almost 0.5 of a day, it's unheard of in other cities. Other cities are ranging between 3 and 6 days right now. So 0.5, we won't see that next data set, but we'll work to getting us closer to that 0.5 again, definitely.
Great, thank you, George. Any questions before?
Really exciting stuff. I love the sign to advertise the program. When do you think, I thought it looked great, but when do you think something like this might go up?
The signage is being worked on with Rebecca and Mohammed currently, and we're just fine-tuning it. Jeff also participated in this exercise with the QR code and some other tidbits, so thank you for that, Jeff. We have a really great team, and when they see these presentations, they make suggestions. Matt makes suggestions, Bob makes suggestions. Everyone on the team has contributed in some way, so we're really proud to pump these out. And I would love to see them go out sooner than later. I can't make that promise since we're still in the design stage. And depending on what the QR codes look like on the sticker, we have to get them the right size or else the phone just won't pick up the QR code. And so we're working through some of those logistics, but we look to launch in the very near future. But I can't give you, I can't promise a date.
Let me give a little bit of context, if you allow me.
Sure.
So we've got, we're kind of wrapping up our no smoking sign installation. So this is on like the sign installation front, so to speak. So we're trying to get through that work. Then we have a very big lift with all of the speed limit signs that we need to install citywide, bringing more than 51% of our street of our streets under 25 miles an hour. That's going to be a very big lift, especially with the number of poles that need to be installed. That's the next priority. Then after that, this would be in line. So we're thinking maybe 3 to 4 months out.
Yeah. That makes sense. I really appreciate also kind of explaining the operations infrastructure that got us to this point. And I really think the point that we've always been responsive and taking care of problems. Actually, you probably heard from the city manager. We did a poll of the city. Over 80% of the people who live here think Emeryville's doing a good job. And you guys are the front line of that. That's when you live in a city and you see like that pile of trash or that mattress and you see that get removed, that's what makes people feel good about their city. And when it sits there and kind of eats away at their opinion of the city. So that's really these things seem small, but that's really what I think drives people. But then going to your other point about the we're at capacity, right? Like this is work. We're inviting more work by asking people, right? We're soliciting their feedback, and everybody's got something when you reach out to them. So with that in mind, have we looked at the C-Click Fix software, what we can do, this I see sometimes the requests come in. You know, it's CyclicFix Fix is the only social media I really participate in. Some people are just kind of like, hey, there's like some problem here. They're vague about it. There's no picture. You know, why don't we, like, instead of us like scratching our heads or going out to see what this person's talking about, don't let them submit that. Say, pictures required if you're submitting like trash that needs to be picked up. Like, we need to know what we're going into. Like, just kick it back. Right. Like we should feel emboldened to do that. We're doing such a great job. So I guess, have we started looking at kind of the ways we triage? And the first step would be like kicking back things that are kind of hard to respond to. Like, just don't let it even get submitted if it's not clear enough and things are not properly specified enough. And then the next part is like internally, how are we like triaging things? Like, some things can probably get kicked to code enforcement or PD. Or I saw one the other day, someone was like, hey, this street would look great if it was turned into a one-way street. Well, that's a great suggestion for city council. So they should get, you know, contact your city council members. This is a, you know, a suggestion that can go to them. Like, throw stuff to us that belongs to us, right? And don't take everything on your shoulders. So I guess my question is, have we kind of looked at the ways to kind of make things easier instead of just, you know, as we're anticipating this deluge of small requests, big requests, and you're constantly trying to parse what's safety critical and what can be deferred for later.
If you allow me.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so I think our first, it was mentioned in the slideshow, our first main step before we get to that level of detail is getting our internal work order system separate, which is separate from CyclicFix, fully up and operational, which is called Limbal, right? Once we deploy that and get everybody used to using it, the next step, that will then put us in a position where we have to basically copy and paste from CyclicFix to the internal system, right? We need to, the next layer after that is an API mm-hmm. between the two systems.
Mm-hmm.
And once that's fully seamless, then at that point, we'll be in a good position to start implementing additional system ideas like what you've mentioned. So we keep working on improving the machinery of our performance.
I see. And maybe as we're going through these, I mean, I kind of see them as, I know there's limited bandwidth and they do kind of seem independent, like the idea about kicking items back to people so they simply cannot submit them if they're incomplete or missing the picture that's needed. But maybe while you're getting these requests, the hard to parse, hard to understand, hard to take action on type items, maybe there's a way to table those as case studies to help inform what the what sort of improvements we would make or how we would gate those requests coming into CyclicFix. The city of Oakland does something pretty extreme. I don't know if you've submitted something in Oakland. They'll give you like a 30-question questionnaire, and I think they screen out quite a lot there. And you know, they're really interested in just, I think, not seeing CyclicFix. In fact, they recently started parking enforcement. They've started hiding the locations because I don't know why. They don't want people to see, you know, just that there's been a parking, somebody parked illegally for 90 days or something. But, you know, I think that's kind of an extreme situation, but we should feel free to take advantage of some of those. Like, if there's a question that comes to your mind, but somebody sends in something and you say, wow, whatever the incident is, like, is this, could this benefit from some sort of improved documentation? That could be a good idea for a gating question. So I was just kind of thinking, as a parallel effort, we could explore the gating aspect just so you're not like, you know, sifting through stuff that's
impossible to manage.
That may become very much necessary as the volumes become higher. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that being said, thank you for this initiative. I think it's one of, if not the most important thing we do, certainly one of the most important things. It seems small, but it's a big deal.
Thank you. Yeah, good couple of questions. So two questions, I think. One, so and I recognize that there's no hard numbers here, but curious from the team's perspective, are the increase in graffiti, especially, but maybe also litter and dumping, how much of that is people are reporting more versus there is in fact more graffiti in the city or more litter and dumping?
They're reporting more and there's more graffiti. Okay, so what we're starting to see is the comfortability of the constituents, because the 85% of the requests are being responded to within half a day. So now we're getting constituents walking down the block and firing off 10 graffitis,
right,
10 separate C-click fixes within 10 minutes. And so I think there's a comfortability now. They're like, oh, since they're working or they're doing, you know, because we hear those comments every day. Oh, they're working since they're doing that. Let's give them more. Right. So we're getting sometimes we get things that aren't actually graffiti. You know, it's like it looks like a brush off mark, like a bike could have rubbed something and it's a swirl, but it's reported as graffiti. And since we're in that area and that stretch by, let's say, Planet Fitness, we have to walk all 15 tickets because we're in that area. They're all within a quarter mile of each other. So we are addressing it, but there is a lot more graffiti. And so, you know, other cities look for blank canvas for graffiti artists to put their stuff on. We're not sure what the answer is, but we'll start to look at what neighboring cities do and see if that ties into something maybe that we can do or that our residents would like to see, maybe to bring those street artists and graduate them to the next level. I don't know that answer, but being from Chicago, a big city, I've seen that done. But it might not fit, you know, what we do here in the city of Emeryville, but we will look at all options. We're Muhammad's open to looking at all options, and he always brings you multiple options to look into. So, but there is an increase in graffiti overall.
Yeah, I guess maybe the another version of that question is, I guess C-Click Fix, I have like two ways of thinking about it, which are aligned, but one is, it's sort of a constituent engagement tool. It makes people feel, you know, like they're able to make change, and I don't, you know, that's good. And also, it's hopefully it makes the maintenance teams work easier, because instead of having to drive around the whole city spotting, you know, litter here and there, the people can sort of direct that work to some extent. So, curious, you know, how much of these, you know, of all of the tickets we get, like, is the team like, oh, yeah, I would have seen that otherwise, versus, oh, I had no idea that mattress was there. That's good to know. I'll go deal with that right now.
Well, we do have a proactive team, as we mentioned. And so everyone's driving a truck and we don't need a ticket to clean something up. Okay. Or if we're already working, you know, Tony just did this yesterday. He's working on a trash can replacement. And he saw some graffiti right next to him. He just grabbed a bow brick. We don't know if there was a C-click for it, but it's that proactive measure. That's what you want your employees to be invested into your city and to really care.
Yeah.
And so we see it. So there's probably more C-click fixes that weren't reported that the proactive staff just took care of, or, you know, a sofa cushion here, a chair there, which grab it and throw it in the truck. We don't need to wait for a ticket.
Yeah.
But the tickets make it nice for us to organize that day and pinpoint the areas we are going to direct our workers.
Okay, makes sense. And then a question about the nomenclature, I guess. So let's say I submit an item that is clearly not the maintenance team's responsibility. Let's say it's a code enforcement, you know, restaurant is playing really loud music late at night or something. I put that on C-Click Fix. If the action that your team is going to take is referred to code enforcement, is that acknowledging it, or is that closing the ticket?
We won't close the ticket for code enforcement. We would just acknowledge the ticket.
Then it goes to code enforcement, then code enforcement.
Or call to Nicole and say, hey, did you see these two tickets pop up? I mean, but we're not to close those
tickets. Okay. So other, gotcha. So
same with PD. The statistics that you're seeing are public works.
Gotcha.
Okay. So abandoned vehicle, for example, has the general response, and it says general response abandoned vehicle. So it provides the number to call PD so the constituent can report, but that closing the ticket would be on the PD's responsibility.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Okay,
great. One more question. Does C-Click Fix, you mentioned like you'll get like a bunch of reports of the same graffiti. Do they, I imagine one service that they could offer is if somebody reports graffiti in the same, approximately the same location, they sometimes can have the ability to prompt the person before they continue with the request to say, is your item already listed here? And they'll show them those other reports. So that way it's supposed to mitigate duplicates.
Currently, what I do is if I see a duplication in the ticket, I respond to the second person and say, duplicate ticket and create a reference point so they don't think we're blowing them off. So I'll just say like ticket 243 has this exact issue and was reported, and I'll put the timestamp.
Interesting. So it still falls on your shoulders. That's an example of something that C-Click Fix. There might be an option. Imagine a checkbox for Emeryville's account that says, funnel people towards identifying duplicates before they continue, and then you won't have to do that. It'll be done automatically. Maybe it's an option. I have no idea. I'm very curious what it looks like on the kind of the admin side and what tools C-Click Fix are making available to a city.
Yeah. I appreciate that this item brings out your engineer brain. Okay.
Problem solving.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Excellent. If no other questions, any public comments? Any further comments?
Nothing else. I like the quarterly updates and I guess just a preview of the this C-Click Fix streamlining. That's those ideas I mentioned would fall into that boat, but I know we're not quite ready to tap into those yet, so we could just wait until the time is right.
I like you look at C-Click Fix almost every night, so I'll flip around and see what it does, and also watch some YouTube videos on my own just to kind of highlight those points you made. If I find anything, I'll shoot you an email.
Thank you, George. And actually, I really appreciate the problem solving. It's really good, logical. Just forgive me, I'm in the business of expectation management. So.
Yeah, and honestly, like I would never look to these numbers to say, I would never, it's not like crime, right? I wouldn't look at it to be like, oh, wow, like graffiti is becoming a problem, because I actually think we in every city, we habitually underreport a lot of things, and a lot of people just kind of complain amongst themselves, and they don't have a city that responds, so they don't. So this is kind of new what we're doing, the idea that, we're soliciting that feedback, and we're giving people an outlet to complain instead of in their own other social circles or bashing the city somewhere. They can channel it in a productive way.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. All right. Well, with that, we'll close 6.3 and move to 6.4, the Bike Tour Everyday Retail ballot.
By the way, Smith Environmental Services, and I have a bike tour every day recap for both of you. So just for some quick stats, we counted 1,127 cyclists passing through the Emeryville system this year, which is really exciting. That's a lot of people. It's a lot of people for a small city. And on the next slide, we'll look at Bike East Bay's regional statistics, but the Emeryville system made up about 9% of bike tour every day participants as a whole. Which is really exciting. That was across 5 stations, our usual stations, and then Emory High joined us again this year, which was great. Passports remained very popular. We actually or I found out at DPAC that the passport is catching on, and other cities want to pick up the idea, which is lovely and super fun. We saw three different bike buses, which was great, and just lots of kids of all ages in general. We had 16 volunteers, so a big thank you to all of the city staff that helped out and all of the DPAC members that woke up early and came out to help us with that. And then we had some fun appearances from AC Transit, Counterculture Coffee, and then Safe Routes to School was at the school. It was awesome. And just quickly for Bike East Biz overview, about 13,000 riders regionally, which is great. And 145 Energizer stations. And so, as I'm sure you both saw, we had three different outreach posters, our usual one, but we also debuted two new ones, one all about the loop and then one about the new speed limit. And these were really great. I saw folks engaging. And just to look at how we compared this year to previous years, we took a little bit of a dip from last year, but not too much, about 50 people. Over 1,000 is still really great. And our two most popular stations were, of course, 66, but also Horton and Stanford, which was unexpected. So an extra shout out to Horton and Stanford, who has more than doubled their number of visitors since they were founded, instituted in 2022. So that's really exciting.
And just a quick note there, I think that's really speaks to the, you know, build out of the infrastructure there and how much that gets people out and riding on the path. So just a kudos to Mohammed and the rest of the public works team for that.
And just noting that our overall total numbers are close to 10% of our population. Bad.
And some fun photos, someone matching with their dog, one of the bike buses, someone that finished their passport. So just fun photos and more fun photos and the lovely stickers that the kids at the school draw for us. It's one of the best parts of the event. It's just, I love seeing what they come up with. And even more photos and more stickers. And a personal favorite, a great message. One of the bike buses had these custom vests, which was really. Two more photos. Thank you both for being there. Great smoothie.
The great smoothie.
Oh, good to hear.
Try mine.
And a couple improvements that Matt and I have identified were more snacks and giveaways. People love snacks and we love giveaways, as well as increasing outreach pre-event. That's definitely something that we could do a lot more of in following years. There's an opportunity for coordination with other stations, like Stanford Health has an Energizer station, so it would be great to collaborate with them next year, as well as maybe some collaboration with local businesses. And then our ultimate goal is to do the whole event set up by bike only. So a big thank you to BPAC members who let us stage tables and tents and bike blenders and all kinds of fun things at their homes beforehand. That was a huge help. But ultimately, we don't want to use the track at all. Cargo bikes, trailers only. We'll get there one day. It's been done in the past. We'll do it again. Okay. And then I'll turn it over to both of you for feedback. What did you like? Hopefully you didn't hate anything, but if you did hate something, I'm all ears.
What did you improve? Yeah, also some questions. Any questions?
Great event overall. How many people completed the passport?
Oh, gosh.
I only got 3 of my 5.
I don't know. I don't have a solid number for you. I'd have to count. Definitely quite a few. I'd have to count how many passports we got left over. And we didn't have many left over at that. It was popular. I know a BPAC member shared that somebody stopped by their station and was like, oh, I need to get to work. I don't have time to do the passport. And like went all the way to work. And then he was at work and he was like, okay, maybe I missed out. And he left work and he came all the way back. And he did, I think they said, the quest to get all the stamps. So just kind of more fun.
They're very cool.
Yeah. It's just a very like rough estimate, but I think it's in the 50 to 60 range. We can get an exact number and come back if you'd like.
Oh, no, that's fine. I was just curious. Yeah. No other questions.
Yeah, any questions, any public comment? Questions or?
Oh, actually, one other question. I know last year we had Strava, the very popular like kind of run tracker, bike tracker. Did they participate this year? I didn't see any of their swag.
They intended to participate, but they did not end up setting up on the day.
Okay.
But collaboration with them maybe next year if we have their contact information. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. I know they're very good at what they do. My wife pays a membership to them, so they're making money. So maybe they should give some freebies to our bikers. But yeah, I really enjoyed the event. Those pictures you had of the one of the bike buses, that was my kid's school, the woman in the Pokemon, but I was running late that day. So we were stragglers afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. So they do every other week they do bike down there. Cool. Things always get dicey once we get to Oakland. So I need to figure out that path, but we do a good job in Emeryville. I was just going to say, don't feel bad about the truck if it helps you set up, because it's an electric truck, right?
Correct. All right.
So, silver lining. Harm reduction.
But it is bike to wherever day. It's our ultimate goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm looking out for, if it takes you all day, I'm supposed to look out for the city's bottom line, right? I want you guys to be time and cost effective.
Yeah, many suggestions for next year?
Just keep it up. It's great. I think a lot of people notice that it's a really fun event. My wife discovered it last year for the first time, and now she really looks forward to it, and she's been biking more to work after that because she sees that biking is fun. So I think it's a great way for people to discover it.
Yeah, no, great job. I completed my passport this year. I was very proud of myself. So many people out and about. I'm honestly shocked that our numbers went down because it seemed as busy as ever. I love seeing the bike buses. That was unexpected. I didn't even know that there were, it seemed like it was recurring thing, and I didn't even know that. So. I think more engagement with businesses, especially the Salmon Health Station. I feel like they set up every year, so I think coordinating, or I don't know if we want to get them on our map, some way to recognize that's there. I feel like there must be tie-ins with businesses. I don't know if Beach Street would be interested in. So I feel like there's nothing on that side of the tracks. So. I'm not sure exactly.
Maybe they could come over to the Horton and
Stanford. Yeah.
Yeah, Horton and Stanford. Yeah. It's like right across the bridge. Right. They can tell people to take a detour.
Yeah, certainly. And hopefully next year, 4 years is under construction, so maybe we'll need a detour anyways. I think that would be, I feel like there's good opportunities to tie in and get people over. Many people are coming through the city who maybe aren't otherwise city. So that would be my main suggestion. But great work as always.
Yeah. And Southern's right there too. Off to the off frame. Mm-hmm. So if they have any progress on their project, they could participate. And hopefully we'll have that big wall off to the left down by then. Do we still need that, Mohammed? The vapor barrier or whatever, dust and vapor barrier.
I think they are still cleaning the soil.
Oh, okay.
But I'd have to
leave it up then.
Power. You don't really want to take down. Bless you. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Just one more quick fun stat about may have mentioned, but the 66 and Greenway was the second busiest station in all of the Bike East Bay territory. Or the whole
Was Albany number one in the city? What are they doing up there? I don't understand.
They have the mayor. They have this whole to-do. I think they have, like, I don't know if they have pancakes or they have some sort of pancakes. Oakland does pancakes too. Yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Surely some.
We should send a spy. You know.
No, thank you. It's really nice. Appreciate it. If nothing else on 6.4, we can move to 6.5, the environmental updates plan.
All right. We'll keep them short and sweet. Speaking of bikes, the AVA e-bike rebate program continues. We have had 818 applicants in the city of Emeryville, which is pretty wild. 6% of the population, which is more than twice by percentage any other city in AVA territory. And it's on par in absolute numbers with cities 5 and 6 times our size, like I think Dublin, Pleasanton, Union City, above all of those cities in terms of applications. So it really is speaking to the ethos of the biking culture that I think Emeryville portrays and the infrastructure that's being built to support it. And then 200 rebates of those have already been redeemed. That have been, residents that have received their bikes. Due to the popularity of the program, their staff is at AVA is considering asking their board to extend the program through December of 2027 and adding another $2 million from their budget to it. So that'll be going in the July AVA board meeting. And that's just kind of an update on that program. I believe we mentioned last time the Adopt a Spot program has launched. We have 10 applicants at this point, which is exciting. It was kind of a soft launch, but we're getting some feedback and improving things. And we have one in each of the categories now. We're still working through our Adopt a Place, but all the other ones have been adopted. We're planning a bigger outreach bonanza a little later in the summer before, storm season hits, so we can have more storm drains adopted. But that's kind of an update on that, and we're excited to have that rolling out. It is on our website, and it's also emeryville.org/adopt-a-spot. So those are the two big ones for today. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions?
The Adopt-a-Spot program, has there been any more thought about kind of expanding or formalizing a Adopt-a-Park aspect to it? I know a park could be a place, more generically, but I'm just imagining if somebody frequently visits one of our parks and they wanted to feel good about cleaning it up and they're just a Emeryville vest and a trash picker-upper away from, taking some load off of George's shoulders and preempting some C-click fix reports, is there a possible outlet for that? Maybe we could have a couple people adopt a park, but then you just have like these empowered volunteers, with pride in their local park, picking up the various cigarette butts and trash and stuff around there.
Yeah, that's definitely something we could incorporate into this. I'm going to Parks and Rec Committee later this summer to do a formal announcement of this program. And that's one of the things I think I'll be discussing with them. They do have the Love Your Parks program, the rotating parks cleanup. So that's kind of an ongoing conversation with how those things could be maybe assimilated or what the best way forward would be for that. But I think kind of next steps for that conversation is going to be the Parks and Rec Committee.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great. Any public comments? Any other comments on this item?
No, it's a great program. Keep us posted on the developments. It's really exciting outlet for people's civic pride.
Yeah, I would be. I appreciate some regular cadence of metric updates. Just curiosity. Great. Nothing else on 6.5. We're going to move to 6.6. Jeff? Capital improvement plan updates.
It'll be brief as well. Just a quick update on the Civic Center HVAC system. So we completed a bunch of different upgrades through April of this year. Have already been seeing a significant reduction in our energy consumption here at City Hall. So 72% of what it was last year. So just overall great for the climate and our energy bill. And then for the sustainable streetscapes, just continuing closing that up. So crews are finishing a bus stop lighting as well as some landscape planning and some just basic punch list work along the corridor, as well as some warranty work at 53rd and Hollis this last week. And then some sidewalk and tree work upcoming in front of grocery outlet, which is being timed with a private encroachment permit work with that same team. And then with 40th Street, the designs team continues the progress through the Caltrans AB mud permitting processes, and we expect to put out a construction management RFP later this summer, which is kind of sliding the tentative schedule to put out the bid later six construction. And then just some overall public works updates. So public works, they're coordinating ordering signs and pellet spark poles for the 2026 speed limit sign install project with that recent adoption. So expecting that to be completed by end of July or mid-August if everything can get procured. And then if you haven't seen already, we did, public works did install 16 no smoking signs along the greenway. So that was a request of this committee and it has been completed.
Almost.
Just about.
Really good.
That concludes the update that I had.
Any questions? No questions.
I have two questions. One, on the sustainable streetscapes item, does the last sentence mean that the sidewalk in front of grocery outlet is going to be fixed?
Has it already been fixed? In process. So we worked with the property owner since it's their responsibility. The project fixed curb and gutter, but the sidewalk is still on the property owner, and they obtained a permit, but they still have not yet broken ground. So I believe as per my last conversation with code enforcement, we've given them 72-hour notice that they need to break ground so that they can are in a position to finish by the time the permit expires.
And then this question of the Civic Center HVAC, I'll sort of loosen it in. I know a few years ago there was conversation around, I think Ava was discussing a program to include some city facilities across their area in a like virtual power plant kind of concept. Did that happen? And is that, does any of this ring a bell?
Yeah, so, I guess they had a couple of programs they ran. They had a critical municipal facilities program, which was one, and that was focused more on like the individual buildings and electrification of them and making them able to off-grid if they needed to in case of emergencies. They actually had a separate one that was more focused just on solar and storage.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, we initially participated in it, but it was focused more toward larger cities that had larger sites. Because that's what they were looking for. And so the timing didn't work out for us to continue on with that, but it's something we're still continuing to investigate, I guess.
Great. Thank you. Any public comments on this item?
No public comment.
Any comments?
No questions or no comments.
Great. Excellent. We can close on 6.6. Thank you, Jeff. And move to our 7 future agenda items. Maybe before we see if there's any items, do we have a sense of what July, what we might be discussing in July?
Yeah, why don't you bring that up? We don't have any items right now. So staff is proposing to cancel that meeting at the moment. That could change. But right now, that's how it stands.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. Any other items you want to add to it?
Nothing to add. I saw the no smoking signs. They looked really good, the ones that have been installed. I flagged two locations on the north end at 67th Street that were missing, two Emeryville benches that didn't have any around there. So it was just north of 67th and just south of 67th on the Doyle Greenway. And then I guess we did not continue the installation past towards the from Stanford and Horton, continuing to down past the Embry and the South Bayfront Bridge. So that span is still missing, but I understand from Muhammad that those will, I sent a bunch of pictures to him. Hopefully that was easy enough to forward. I know these benches kind of blur together, but I think if you walk down, you can kind of see the benches in question. So I would be fine, maybe once we get that swath of signs up, we can drop this off. So you know, I can give permission to Muhammad or Jeff, you know, once that's installed, and you know, that we just you know, don't carry this forward, you know, for the August, would it be August meeting or September?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can also just bring an update once that is completed, so that we can have some public knowledge of it, and then we can take it off.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. One thing that crossed my mind while I was looking at some of these no smoking signs. So you might have some benches that are, you know, generally we have those poles that they can be attached to, those like light poles. But as you get to the Emery, there'll be like a bench. There's always a bench where everybody likes to do their smoke breaks, right? And right behind the bench, there's the big fence that goes to the tracks. And a perfect place would be like, you know, at least in a few of these instances of benches, would be like, you know, a sign fixed to the Emeryville side of the fence. But does that fence belong to the railroad? Would they be fine with us putting a sign there? Did we install that sign? Do we know? I don't want to get into some weird jurisdictional issues. I
appreciate your intuition. And the answer is the fence likely belongs to the railroad and probably not worth our effort to even begin that conversation.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I'm sure there's easy locations nearby. I think I saw light posts near pretty much all of the locations. I guess I'll, you know, whoever figured out the other ones, they did a good job. So you'll see those other pictures.
That's good. All right, well, maybe we'll have a shorter list next time. But